Happy St. Paddy's Day. I couldn't wear my kilt. It would be too ugly. But my birthday is not today. It's St. Joseph's Day, which is the Italian day. And I'm Irish, and 80% Irish. My English Kingsley comes from my father. But anyhow, most of my family's all Irish. My mother's side. And my name, I think somebody asked me last night, why wasn't I named Joseph? Usually if you're born on a feast day, you name your son or your daughter, if so happened to be a popular saint, that person. And I wasn't. My brother's middle name is Joseph. But my name happens to be Richard Michael. I was named after two priests, two uncles. So before I was born, my fate was sealed. I had no choice. I thought I did, but I had Uncle Father Richard and Uncle Father Michael. Anyhow, as a priest now for almost 30 years, I get involved in people's lives, and I share in a lot of people's grief. That's I consider a blessing, to share in another's grief process. And as I say, as a priest, you get to do that a lot. Maybe, in over 30 years, there's countless times that I have been part of a person's loss of somebody. Even right after I was ordained, I can remember in Berkeley, friends of mine, we were having a party for me and after ordination, and the two little kids lost their kittens. And I had to go to bury the kittens and do a kitten service. But those children were in tears. What can I do? You know, so so many times I've been involved in people's grief, including my own deep grief over my losses too. And I can say that grief is a wild ride. It's a crazy ride sometimes. People like Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and others, these people map out the faces of grief, they predict the stages of grief, and how they schedule the duration of grief and how long it will take. But those people who do that, at least for the moment, they're not in grief. They have the luxury of observation, of standing back and seeing. But when the loss of a loved one inhabits your soul, you are occupied territory. And resistance is futile. If you try to resist it, it's futile. Don't ever, ever resist grief when it comes knocking on your door. But I give you this advice, and I think it comes from Confucius, but I'm not sure, but I think it is the bird of sorrow may land on in your hair, or for some of us, on our heads. But don't let it make a nest there. Grieve, but you got to move on and let go. I don't know about you, but I like this emotionally troubled, perturbed, weeping Jesus that we are seeing today being swept toward the tomb of the one whom he loves. It is his love that is causing Jesus this grief. Just as it is the love of Mary and Martha that is causing them their grief. And if Jesus had not loved Lazarus, if he had not loved his sisters, Martha and Mary, he would have been unmoved. Maybe he would have been philosophically interested in the death of this guy, but he would have been unmoved by it. We are all eager for love. But I can remember a distraught woman, a young woman, a widow, who once said to me, "Richard, somebody should have told me that all marriages end in either divorce or death, but they all end. The truth of our eternally grounded people that we are, who we are trafficking in time, is this: the deeper our love, the deeper our grief. This is a truth we seldom think about when we give our hearts away, or when we buy that puppy, or when we fall in love with another person or an animal. We're not thinking like that. In the temporary perishing world we all inhabit, the advent of love is the seed of grief. The great philosopher Gabriel Marcel said, "To love someone is to say to them, 'Thou shall not die.'" And even if you don't say that out loud, even if we only whisper it in the cellar of our hearts, love readies us for weeping, because our first kiss and our first tear are linked together. But I will say this, however, that this same love that causes us to grieve is also the love that will console us. But you must trust the love, and you have to follow the love to its very root. We must not see it as a futile rebellion against mortality, but rather we should see it as a hint that there is more than meets the eye, more than what conventional knowledge will admit to us, and that this love that makes us accompany the ill, to even be there for the dying in a hospice situation, or visit the graves after they die, it may be showing us something about God and God's love. And so our reluctance to let people go may touch a truth of Lazarus' resuscitation. You see, the love that troubles Jesus and makes him weep at the loss of Lazarus, this love also makes him go after Lazarus and to free him from the imprisonment of death. The love of God in Jesus will not let Lazarus go. And so death has to release Lazarus. So the love that causes our grief is at root the love that consoles our grief. Remember that. Consolation ultimately comes from realizing that love is stronger than death. That's from the Song of Songs. But that's not an easy realization to embrace. As Martha knew, the stench of death stinks. Sometimes our minds focus on the unyielding fact of physical death. And so we speculate about how some form of continued existence may be possible. Well, I think the story that we just heard about Lazarus suggests another way to go about this. You see, Jesus is the resurrection and the life. And those who can see, who can enter into him, we are told that we can participate in eternal life now. Not after we die. No, now. Now we participate in eternal life. And in this relationship with Jesus, we find that the love of God that sustains and raises people is an intimate presence that is at the very center of our identity, where we are whole, where we are one with God, where we are eternal. The more we contemplate this presence, as Mary did, and the more that we can integrate this presence, as Martha did, the more we realize its gentleness is really an enduring strength. But that takes a while. Sustained by this presence in us, we can grieve greatly the physical loss of those we love, our family and our friends, our spouses and loved ones. And we can hope greatly for their continued existence in God. Because that's what we all are. We're in God. Love generates both grief and consolation. St. Paul said to the Philippians, he said, "Do not grieve as others do who have no hope." Okay. But I assume that we should grieve as people who have hope. Because I don't believe we are told and being asked not to weep, but rather we're being asked not to despair, but to be people of hope and faith. You see, eternal life conquers death, but it doesn't abolish it. Still gonna have to die to enter into eternal life. You have to go through that tunnel. You know, Lazarus was raised because he is one whom God and Jesus loved. And like Lazarus, you and your loved ones are loved deeply by God. And that's the message. It's interesting, the message that Dr. Alexander, I went to see him, I couldn't get in, but it was three things that he was told, and was one was, you are loved. You are deeply, deeply loved. And you must know that. And secondly, you are to fear nothing, because God is always with you. And thirdly, you can do nothing wrong. Those were the three things he learned in his experience. You need not fear death. We Christians especially need not fear death. Rather, we see it as a transition into an experience of greater life and love, which only can be described in the end for me is to say that this life and love is out of this world. You're not going to find it here. Not the love and life that's waiting for us. We want it now, but and you'll get it. Here, everything changes. Have you noticed? Everything always changes here. That's what life is about. And then there comes that great change. And the only thing that remains, as we know and been told, is what? Life and love.